Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tulsa, of Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive into a victorious purple week. No purple therapy around here. You got an extra day and a half before the Lions even show up around here. Gives me time to get over to the Beaumont in Catonsville. I have some remnants of the Lucky Sevens. I also have the Pressure Lux. Whammy, whammy. Put the whammy on Joe Flacco on Sunday. And I will have the Raven scratch-offs as well by Tuesday. So I'll be holding them up by the time that the Detroit Lions and their bloated 52 points get here. The Ravens had their own bloated offensive efforts here this week. Luke Jones was in the tiny little Kevin Byrne press box up in the corner of the stadium, where I actually had a shot of like me in the corner of my seats in Section 6 in Memorial Stadium, very similar to your press box perch. Although the beer was cheaper in Section 6 in 1996, but 30 years, J.O., Ray Lewis. I'm like, where's Ed Reed? And then I realized, oh, it's just about like the 96 thing. I don't really know what they were doing. Luke, to be honest with you, I'm still in the halo of my blue and white and seeing the big wheel on the stage at Union Brewing when I had a delicious Zadie's Lager doing the C. He can't do both arms. He said, I can only do one arm. So he did
Huh.
C O L T S Colts. And dude, I had no offense to your Ravens experience and getting to hang out with Chad Steele and Jerry Coleman and John Harbaugh on a Sunday. I hung out on Saturday and I didn't even talk to Burt Jones because I'm a little intimidated by him and everybody was trying to get at Burt. And I just wanted to like have Joe Erman give me a hug and have Renata Linhart give me a hug and just those players. But what a weekend. And to pass the torch to you, I want to give this to you because I went searching through our files over the weekend. Because I had a lovely young lady come up to me at the Colts event. I had a lot of people come up to me at the Colts event, by the way. By the way, they love our work, just so you know. They like you more than me. And there was a sign on the way out that says Luke Works. And I took a picture of it, and I'm going to share it with you. It's going to become a new meme around here, I think. Luke Works. I swear to God, there's a place called Luke Works in the Union Brewing. It's right next to the Charmery, right next to the ice cream
Check
store.
it out.
Take a picture there. It's funny. I'll send it to you. But this young lady came up to me about an hour in. By the way, my wife loved the food. She's like, best effing food ever, ever, ever. My wife was carrying on about that pit beef over there. So good job, Union Brewing. That's all I'm going to say, Adam. She says, I know you from the internet. I'm like, oh, do you? She's like, yeah, I'm Ted Marchibroda's granddaughter. I'm like,
Oh.
do tell. She's about your age, dude. And all of her memories, in regard to Ted are about like her being a young lady, teenager coming of age like you. She knew everything about Ted. I told her I was at the Harbaugh game in Pittsburgh where Ted almost went to the Super Bowl with Siragusa as a Colt. She said, I was there too. And then, of course, a week later, he's here. I found the whole day of radio I did the day he got hired, 2:15:96. We didn't have a name. 2:15:96. Think about the date on that. We didn't have Ray Lewis. We didn't have John. We didn't I don't, like I found tapes to send her over the weekend, and I'm thinking it was a glorious weekend, and I'm sorry that Joe played so poorly, but I mean, it was a bit of a laugher, right? And we'll sit here and talk it, we'll blue in the face. But 30 years, man. I mean, 30 years. As Lydell Mitchell said, 50 years. Been a long time, man.
It has been. And when you kind of have all of that that comes together, I mean, obviously you think about the really, really good old days with Johnny Unitas and company and how many of those guys have passed on. Not all of them. I mean, we still have Lenny Moore and so many pleasant memories. And then, as you mentioned, the mid-70s and how unexpected that was, right? I mean, I didn't live it, but having read it, having read about it, having heard the stories from my grandparents and my father, and Burt Jones being as close to Johnny Unitas as you could be, I suppose,
I had to
right? I
think
mean,
about what a 7, 8, and 9 year old that's how old it was. Seven, eight,
yeah.
nine, what that version of me shaped all of this Earl Campbell, Dan Pastor, and everything that's happened over the last 20 years with you and me, last 40 years on the radio, like, and Ted being like, and Joe Ehrman signing an autograph for me at JCPenney in 1975, and just seeing these men up on stage, and it was my wife would take, she came in, she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I'm just a little overwhelmed." You know what I mean? Like I was really overwhelmed, and she's like, "I haven't seen you like this," and I'm like, "I don't really want pictures or autographs as much as I'm just trying to like go back to this place in time where I'm in this room, and the Colts are in Baltimore, and they're all that matters for the couple of hours." I mean, it sounds silly, but like I'm telling you, dude, it was something on Saturday afternoon. At least it was for me, from thoughts of my father too. And now the Colts are gone and never to come back. And to the people that matter, they needed a bigger room, by the way.
Well, and it's great to do something like that. And then, as you bring it to the modern day, I mean, I think back to 1996, and I was a month shy of my 13th birthday
What a birthday you got, Earhart, dude, huh?
I mean, when the Ravens played their first game, what was it, September 1st, 1996? And I wasn't there that day, but I went to probably three or four games that year. And I think now of a 13-year-old, or 14, 15, 16-year-old who's there with their dad, their mom, their grandfather, their uncle, whatever. And I think now the Ravens kind of have some of that going on, in the sense that if you are 15 years old going to the Ravens Browns game on Sunday, you have no recollection whatsoever of Ray Lewis as a player, right? You have no recollection whatsoever of Ed Reed as a player. And
Or of Joe Flacco winning a Super Bowl, you might have been
sure,
three
you might remember Joe Flacco's last couple years when, things weren't going great
in the
for
way
the.
that I remember Johnny Unitas not being so good here at the
Right.
end.
So that's where, I mean, that's part of what makes sports so fun, is that you have different players, different eras, different teams that mean something different. Even though the records are objective, the win-loss record's objective, whether they made the playoffs or not is an objective thing, but you have teams that are carry much different meaning for a lot of people. I mean, we've talked about this recently with the Orioles, as far as their, last 40 years being very little to write home about, save for a handful of seasons. That's why the Buck Showalter era, the Adam Jones era Orioles are so revered by younger people, because, someone younger than me, I mean, I was born 2 weeks before the Orioles last won the World Series. So every generation has something different that they kind of latch on to, and it might feel a little bit different. And I think that's where it's important just to recognize that. So awesome to see the 1975 celebration. Cool to see the Ravens recognize those guys. Burt Jones got a really warm welcome coming out of the tunnel as they announced those guys before they then announced the Ravens. And I mean, I guess the one thing I was a little, I'd say, surprised, although I get it, it's an AFC North rival, all that, I would like to have seen them do a little more, to recognize Joe Flacco just on the video board. I mean, the Orioles did that with all their players they traded away here over the
They
last
didn't
couple of
give
months.
Joe a moment to have flowers at
No,
all, huh?
I didn't see, unless I missed it, and I, I'm not sitting there watching
Well,
the
they're going to
video
bring him
board.
back in
And
20
that's the
minutes
thing.
and try to Ring of Honor him. I mean,
And
I
that's the thing.
guess.
And the other thing I did notice that they did that I did think was really cool. They were very quick to post the post game embrace of him and Lamar sharing a big hug. I mean, it was nice. I don't know if you saw it on social media, but it was cool. And they showed that on the video board. So it's not as though they completely ignored him, but I thought there'd be, first TV timeout, something like that. But all that said, I mean, it was
I
a.
don't want to get to the game yet. Once we get to the game, it'll
No,
go
but I, no.
downhill, right? I mean,
Well,
because the game wasn't, I don't
I
know,
think they
man.
were. We'll
They
get to the game, but yeah, I think you had all these generations of players being recognized. I mean, they brought Eric Weddle and C.J. Mosley back. I mean, think about
Oh,
that. I mean, that,
really? I see. I mean, I wasn't at, I don't know if you heard, I don't go to the game. So I only get what they give me. I
So the.
don't. So to do tell, because I mean, obviously I'm extremely inch. I mean, I saw Pitta wearing the Elite shirt,
Yeah.
right? I mean, and I see things on their social media, but their social media is just annoying, honestly. You know what I mean? Like, it just
I mean, you have to
there's
filter through some stuff, sure.
yeah, I
I
mean,
hear
it's
you.
just like I don't know who could take all of that in. I don't know. I don't
It's
know.
just
You
a
know, I
lot.
mean,
I mean,
no
it's a
matter
lot.
how be true to your school you are, I'm information based and I'm okay with the personality base, but from the gambling down, top down to the fashion state, I like it's just too much. But that being said, so I miss it all. You know what I mean? Some of it I can't filter out. So, but the alumni part of this, I am interested. Edwin Mulitalo sent me a series of texts at 8:30 on Sunday night that were kind of fun and random. I'm like, hey, Ed, but but other than that, I have no touch other than with the Colts. Oh, I saw Kyle Richardson and I saw Femi. They were at the Colts event.
Yeah, the way they now the halftime ceremony, it came across as disjointed. And again, I'm looking at the game stats. Like, I have different objectives than solely just soaking it in like a Ravens fan would. But that part seemed a little disjointed to me. But they had I thought, kind of right off the bat, I mentioned that they announced the 75 Colts. The plenty of 75 Colts came out. That was great to see. The legend of the game was Ozzie Newsome, and Ozzie well enough to know that that's not something Ozzie would want to do, generally speaking. But it was cool. They announced Ozzie as a legend of the game, and the legend of the game, as they announce literally right before kickoff. That's something they do moments before they kick off the game. So Ozzie comes out, and then right behind him was Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden, each of them holding a Lombardi trophy. I thought that was cool. For something, as far as everything they tried to do with the halftime ceremony, that was the most, that came across as the most authentic, genuine, really cool moment. Because here's Ozzie Newsome, who I always forget this, and I think so many people forget how young he actually was as the general manager of the Ravens. Even though his official title wasn't GM yet, but 96, he was running the show. But he was, what, 40 years old? I mean, he was not nearly. It's funny.
And
I had a cop.
universally scoffed at as
Oh, yeah. Like, there
Art
was this idea of what's he
Modell's
doing? Yeah,
stepson. Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. Yeah.
And it's funny. I had a brief conversation with my mom Sunday night, and she was kind of asking me, what you just did as far as what was it like and all that. And she asked me, she's like, how old's Ozzie Newsome now? Like, is he in his 80s? I'm like, no. I said, Ozzie's 69. Like, people think that he's like this really much older than he actually is. I mean, he took over that role when the Browns became the Ravens at a very young age. But boy, he was really good. So, I just thought that moment, the legend of the game moment, with Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden flanking him, holding the Lombardis, his first two draft picks, two Hall of Fame players, not just Hall of Famers, but like elite of the Hall of Fame players. That was cool. That was cool. The halftime thing, it's always rushed.
I was gonna say,
It's
like,
always rushed.
let me have a
So.
minute on this because, like, I've done a million of these across stadia everywhere, across Monday Night Football celebrations for Dan Marino in the driving rain in Miami at halftime. Like, I've seen all of these Yankee Stadium tributes and all of this. Baseball does it better.
Yeah.
Hockey does it pretty well because, like, they can do before a game, the spotlight's down, you get a moment. Football, no time for it before the game, no oxygen for anything to have that pre-game thing that like the Orioles had a couple of weeks ago with Ripken or that in-game moment. The halftime thing, dude, I mean, I've seen Lawrence Taylor get honored with Bill Parcells at Giant Stadium and nobody care. I mean, it's just sort of like halftime people are pissing,
I
drinking,
was just going to
eating,
say.
running around, and there's no oxygen for it. So I just think, I mean, I'll go back to Eagles season ticket. I was Eagles season ticket holder for years, and they bring Chuck Bednarik out. They bring, well, it just didn't matter. And the Colts, the same thing. I mean, I think we have association, you and me specifically, a bias because of baseball and how good baseball's been. When I bring Charles Steinberg on here, we talk about the last game at Memorial Stadium or, any of the 21-31 stuff or the way John Miller used to hold court with these celebration type of things. Football, It just the halftime thing doesn't lend itself to being memorable. It's the bowl's never full. You can never really hear it real well. It's rushed. It's just never great. And I think that that's unfortunate. You know, they'll put Flacco into the ring of this or the hall of that, or they'll do their 3 minutes. Nobody will be paying attention. And to your point, the 15-year-olds will be 22 then, and they don't remember Joe Flacco
Yeah, I mean,
any more than some people were there, like Eddie Murray. Who's that? You know, like, okay, you know.
and that kind of goes to what I said though about the generational thing. I mean, let's face it, let's call a spade a spade. And I say this with no disrespect to the 75 Colts because I have a lot of respect for the 75 Colts just because I love Baltimore sports history. I mean, I didn't live that era, but let's face it, most people that are attending a Ravens game in 2025 don't have many
They have
memories.
no idea who George Kuntz is.
Yeah, I mean, they
No
might not
doubt.
even know
And
who those
George
guys
Kuntz is
are.
a borderline Hall of Famer, but he should have been. And
So
I
that's
told
where
him that on behalf of my father.
you saw I mean, Burt Jones was kind of the exception, Lydell Mitchell the exception, but the others who got the warmest welcome, Bruce Laird and Stan White, who clearly have younger generations know a little more from a broadcasting standpoint, you know, not just as a player. So, having done work, you know, covering the Ravens over the years, and it's fine, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be a home run, you know. And to your point, I mean, it's tough to do it at halftime. I mean, as I just, you know, or as you just said, I mean, that was the first thing that came to mind. That's what people are wanting to use the restroom, especially if you were tailgating before the game and you've been at it for a few hours at that point in time. You know, breaking the seal or whatever, but it was still cool. And I mean, it's regardless of how it comes across, regardless of how many people sit and stay in their seats at halftime, it's just special to think. And that's where I had some memories of when I was 10 or 11 years old, which Colts history was all I had at that point in time as a young Baltimore sports fan. As far as football went, you know, that's all you had. You had memories and
Were you a
these.
fan of a team when you were 10?
Yeah, I mean,
I never asked you this. I mean,
and
did you
this
have
is going
a
to say,
49ers? Like, my kid,
I like the
yeah.
49ers for a couple years. I mean, I liked Joe Montana. I loved Jerry Rice. I mean, I did. And I even when Montana was traded to the Chiefs, you know, when he ended up in Kansas City, I liked them for 5 minutes too, because I just like Joe Montana. I mean, but that said, it's not like I
So Joe
begged my.
Montana was your first superhero quarterback in the
Yeah, I
league.
suppose. I mean,
Okay, all right.
and yeah, I mean,
That's
it
not
wasn't
uncommon for somebody your age.
exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's very unoriginal, right? I mean, there's nothing.
Yeah, my kid was of the 49ers Bills era where, like, you know, as long as it wasn't the Redskins or the Giants or the Cowboys, I was cool with it. You know what I mean?
I mean,
Like, it
I think back to my closest friends when I in 1993, couple of us like Joe Montana. So at that point, it was the Chiefs, but you know, the 49ers before that. One was a big Dan Marino guy, so he liked the Dolphins, and another was a Troy Aikman guy, like the Cowboys, right? I mean, that's kind of that's all you really had. I mean, there weren't, you know, especially at that point, we were living in Southern PA. You didn't know any Redskins fan. I mean, you knew a couple here and there, but I mean, that wasn't a Baltimore thing. I mean, as much as Washington tried to. You know, Jack Kent Cook tried to ram that down Baltimoreans' throats. I mean, we weren't having that. So yeah, it was a strange time. But I just thought back to as I see that history, and I'm just like, wow, there's 30 years of this franchise now. And
30 really good years. I
yeah, I mean,
mean,
32
put it up against
championships.
anybody but the Patriots over the last
Right,
30 years, and it
right. Or the
measures.
Chiefs the last five, right? I mean, that's special. I mean, and that is. So regardless of how much you actually soak in the literal ceremony they have, like just that you can do that. That's pretty special. Because again, sitting here and, you know, we just celebrated the 30th anniversary of 21-31. And what, it was a month later or 2 months later when we found out that the Browns were coming to Baltimore. But, you know, just thinking what that was, I mean, at that point in my life, there was very much a thought of, it's kind of just baseball. And I like football like for what it is, but it's not something I'm incredibly passionate about. So to see a 30-year history that then kind of, you know, having the intersection of the Colts being, you know, 75 Colts being there on Sunday, that was pretty special.
Well, I would just say this, and this would be for anybody who's your age or younger, because you didn't even bring it up, and maybe it's lost upon you. And some people came up to me at the Colts event and told me that they read Purple Rain 1, and it's the first page, chapter one. I wrote it in 2001. The whole thing's a miracle. Like the fact that we ever got a team when the Redskins didn't want us in the league, the NFL didn't want us in the league, owners didn't want us in the league. They didn't see it as a revenue source. They didn't see it as a growth strategy. They saw it as a nuisance. Be like putting another baseball team in New York. Yeah, we need one on Long Island. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, fine, but we don't. It's like putting the Chargers in LA. Didn't need to do that. But the fact that the Ravens exist was miraculous. Miraculous. And because I worked at the paper, I worked next to the reporters that flew around with the league. We were not in any way anyone's favorite. We lost the expansion. I mean, all of that. So the fact that the team's been here 30 years, miraculous. The fact that they've been really good at drafting football players, miraculous. The fact that the league itself has stabilized and grown across the world, across the globe, has allowed the Ravens to become a global brand. And that sucks for East Baltimore. And it sucks when Justin Tucker's out, serially doing whatever he was doing to the young ladies in Baltimore and getting away with it, that their badge is so significant that the owner doesn't have to answer questions. Because 30 years into this, I think about what their promise was and what they've delivered on the field, off the field, including Ray Lewis in a jumpsuit, Jamal Lewis having time, all the things that have gone on jurisprudence-wise, Ray Rice, whatever Justin Tucker did, although he did nothing because it was a football decision, wink, wink. So all the good, the bad, and the ugly. But John Moog, Governor Schaefer, the legislature in Annapolis, the gumption of some Baltimore executives to say, we're not adopting the Redskins. We're not putting the Redskins in Laurel. I'm not giving you roads. We're not going to build a super stadium, at Bowie Racetrack. We're not doing any of that. All of that happened to pave the way that the Ravens could ever exist so that Steve Big Shoddy Shots could buy them and own them and run off on a yacht, making billions of dollars and not having to answer questions. That's not what I stood up and fought for with the PSL money and local and Baltimore and hanging at the barn and bringing people. It's a different business. And 30 years into that, I'm gonna say I accept that. I realize that, but I also realize as we talk about baseball, they have to figure out how to be local. Because they can't be anything other than local. Meanwhile, the Ravens have transcended that because the league has transcended that and the sport has transcended that in a lot of ways. And, that little bull roast with the Colts, you know what it felt like to me, Luke? It felt like the CFL Colts when I was in Vancouver. Like little tiny club of people that like, the team, but everything the Colts left behind are the grandchildren and your niece, whose grandfather loved the Colts. And, that's what makes the Ravens what it is. And I think that's what makes Joe Flacco coming back such a big story until the game started. And it went okay for a while, for the Browns. I mean, it was a game. And certainly defensively, Schwartz felt like he drew it up. But the Flacco pick, it was all over after that. I mean, as I, that was the end. What Flacco throwing off balance down the side, like, can't do it. Ross Tucker's crushing him on the air. I got my head in my hand. Joe's wife's probably like, no. Joe's sons are probably like, Dad. It wasn't good.
It wasn't, and I mean, it was great for the Ravens, right? I mean, so look, I mean, this was a very interesting game, and as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, you look at the final score, and if you didn't watch the game, you look at the final score, you look at the box score quickly, and you say, oh, hey, the Ravens scored 40 plus points again, and Lamar Jackson threw four touchdowns again. Oh, their offense was great. That's not really what the game was about. If you look at that game in the first half, my goodness, I mean, the Ravens had it was 81 yards at halftime. I mean, they were 81 yards on 27 plays. You look for the game, Nestor. I went back and looked at this because I looked at the final numbers and I saw the final yardage. The Ravens had 242 net yards. That is the fewest number of total yards they've had in a game since in a game Lamar started. So exclude the end of 21, the end of 22, the 2023
Throw out all
finale.
Snoop games, yes.
Yeah, throw out all of those. That is the lowest total yardage they've had since that Kansas City Monday night game in Baltimore back in 2020. That game where the Chiefs just came into town, empty stadium, right? It was the COVID year, and really, really beat the you know what out of them. That was their lowest rushing total they've ever had with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. That was Derrick Henry's lowest rushing total since his final month with the Titans 2 years ago. So it speaks to this was not about the offense. This was about the defense and the special teams rebounding. And at a time where the offense was really sputtering in that first half, I mean, they were having trouble getting anything going, sustaining anything. Lamar was off. They weren't protecting well. They weren't run blocking at all. The defense and the special teams led the way. And that was the exact opposite of what we saw in Buffalo, right? I mean, the offense until the last couple drives was phenomenal. The defense was horrible in the fourth quarter, not great before that. And the special teams sprinkled in some missteps and bad plays throughout the evening. So, I mean, it was
Well, it felt
special
like the
teams.
Browns were going to survive the block punt. I mean, even the kid could come back out and punt. The rest of the game was, certainly didn't feel that way in the moments after that. And falling on the ball and scoring the touchdown and not, like it was really a wacky game in that way. I mean, it was really a disjointed and I don't know, on television, and maybe it was just the mics, sounded really quiet. It was really strange on television that it never got loud.
It's hard for me to say. I mean, obviously, sitting in the press box, you're behind glass, and that was the case even with the old press box. But now, being in the corner the way that we are, I have a much more difficult time gauging that. But like I just said, though, you had an offense that did next to nothing in that first half, right? Even in the
They
third
got
quarter.
boomed coming off the field at one point. Yeah.
But think about even the third quarter where right off the bat, the long completion to Hopkins to the 1 yard line, and then they go backwards and they have to settle for a field goal. Then Wiggins has the interception in the long return. I mean, goal to go from the 5 yard line. They had to take it to fourth and goal to score, right? So John Harbaugh said it after the game, and normally when you hear a coach say this when it's a 24-point victory, he said it. This was a grind. Like, the final score, don't let that fool you. Like, that was a grind. And I mean, the Browns defense was really, really good. I mean, it was. I mean, the Ravens took advantage of the fact that the Browns were really susceptible and vulnerable with their slot. They lost their slot corner in the preseason, what, Emerson. So that was the thing that the Ravens were able to take advantage. And I mean, DeVonta Walker catches two touchdowns, didn't even play an offensive snap last week. So how random is that? And Tylan Wallace had the big sequence. He recovers the fumble and then catches the touchdown on the next play. So it was, even though you look at the final score, you look at the fact that Lamar threw four touchdowns, and don't get me wrong, the offense got going in the second half. I mean, that's obvious, but it was the defense giving them short fields. It was the special teams doing what they did. I mean, the Ravens had two drives the entire game that were longer than 36 yards. I mean, just put that into perspective. When you score 41 points, that tells you, man, the defense and the special teams did some very serious lifting in that football game. But it's a good thing. If we've learned one thing from these first 2 weeks for a team that everyone touted as a Super Bowl favorite, we have, at the very least, week one collapse acknowledged. We've seen the immense upside that this team has if they can put all three phases together at once, right? And we understand over 17 games, you're not going to do that every week. And you're going to have, just like they did in week one, where the defense stunk. In week two, the offense didn't stink. I mean, that'd be crazy to say that, but they struggled in the first half. There's no question about that. I mean, like I said, statistically, it's one of the worst statistical games they've had offensively, like in terms of yards that they've had when Lamar has been quarterback, which, one, speaks to how high that bar is, but two, again, it speaks to the way that the Browns competed against them. So, I mean, it came down to this: that Browns offense just, and how much of it is a 40-year-old Joe Flacco? I mean, he's 40 years old. If there's any threat of pressure whatsoever, Joe can't move at this point in time. And maybe that's the difference between him now and where he was 2 years ago when he came into Cleveland and they had that magic carpet ride to the playoffs. But their tackles could not deal with the Ravens' edge guys, which, it's not like the Ravens are lining up Lawrence Taylor and Terrell Suggs in his prime, right? So there was that. It tells you their lack of playmakers that Quinshon Judkins, who just signed, returned to the practice field for the first time since June because of his off-field and all of that. Yet, look how much he played. I mean, that speaks to how desperate they are for playmaking ability. So,
Kind of reminds me, didn't the Ravens bring in the veteran, the 6'4" running back, Latavius, right?
Latavius Murray. Oh,
Yeah,
yeah,
they brought him in
well,
like
that was when they
Wednesday, and he was
lost running
running.
the ball Sunday, right? Him and Devontae Freeman, because that
It's
was the.
not had that. I mean, even like Billick had that happen for a minute with like Terry Allen 100 years ago too, where like beginning of the season. But I've rarely seen that in the game of football where somebody walks into a building, and
I mean, he had 10 carries.
I'm
He
just
caught a few
thinking just
passes.
risk of the ball. Giving the ball to a running back's different than giving an assignment to a safety to some degree. So, Luke, I want to break on this because I want to come back and break down Flacco, as well as, Schwartz. That front four with Schwartz and that their ability to stop the run. Like, if I could have just snapshot Derrick Henry's day and sent that over and said, this is what you're going to do to Derrick Henry, I'd think, like, well, at least we were within a touchdown of winning a game. And it just wasn't. Mistakes, mistakes, mistakes. When you're a bad team, the thing that makes you bad isn't just the fact that you're bad, it's that you make mistakes. So, nonetheless, Luke and I are going to continue the conversation. We had a beautiful chat about Corral and the Colts. I put some pictures up of Burt Jones. I did not talk to Burt, but I did talk to George Koons, who told me he's going to come on and talk about his McDonald's entrepreneurship. He is the French fry king of Las Vegas, of McDonald's, George Koons. I did not know this. So he's my dad's favorite player, so I'm looking forward to that. Joe Erman and I, which was the highlight of Saturday for me. Well, Ted Marchabrota's niece was the highlight, and seeing her smile and making me cry. But Joe Erman, man, I saw Joe Erman, and he recognized me. He, like, lit up, and he gave me – it was like the Sack Pack was coming in on me, him and Dutton and Fred Cook. Fred Cook couldn't be there, but John Dutton was there as well. I said to my wife, because, oh, by the way, dude, we brought Beanie Bob. Beanie
I
Bob had
saw
a
that.
beer.
I saw that.
Rasig loved that because Rasig made Beanie Bob. So Beanie Bob got a beer. He was a big hit, amongst the fans. Everybody wanted their picture with Bob, as they always do. But I brought Bob over, and just, sitting there, and Joe Erman's there, and but seeing that smile from Joe where he came after me like this, I said to my wife, see John Dutton over there? John's having some pit beef. I said, he was the first one that told Irsay, up yours, buddy. Get me out of here. I'm going to Dallas. So I said, you probably like Beanie Bob the best. Luke Jones is our reporter, even after blowout wins that weren't so blowouty. I guess. We have plenty of work to do this week, but they get an extra day, and the Detroit Lions come in on Monday night. So we're going to be around all week. I'm going to be at the Beaumont on Tuesday. Councilman Pat Young's going to join me. My pal Chad Koss is going to come on and talk about democracy and civics and 7th grade social studies. And I have a few other guests that are going to come by, and I'm going to have the lamb chops. We're counting down the Tastiness 27th anniversary, all of it brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness. We're down to number four, number three, number two, number one this week. I'm slow playing at a little bit this week because we got a little extra oxygen now, and at some point we're going to watch a little baseball before the week is over as well. So Luke and I are going to come back. We're going to break apart the game. We're going to talk about the post game. Luke was at the game. We did a lot about pregame, a lot about the 1996 Ravens, which is always fun for me. I am Nestor. He is Luke. More football ahead. We're WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.